Good morning. This is the Lou Rockwell Show, and what an honor it is to have as our guest Professor Robert Higgs. Bob Higgs is an extraordinary man, an extraordinary libertarian, and as I can testify from having heard him, an extraordinary teacher as well. He's taught at a number of universities. He's been a senior fellow in political economy at the Independent Institute. He's senior fellow at the Mises Institute. He won the Gary Schlarbaum Prize for a lifetime achievement in the cause of liberty in the tradition of Mises from the Mises Institute. Many other prizes. He's the author of, I thought, 12 books. Now I learned 13, a new one coming out shortly called Taking a Stand. Bob, we could talk about so many things that you're expert in. But one of your lectures that stayed with me, maybe more than almost any of the others, which is saying something, was one I'd sum up by saying, is the U.S. government going to blow up the world? Do you want to talk to us about that?
Well, Lou, as you know, people argue all the time about the positives and the negatives of the state. And those of us who are individualist anarchists talk a lot about what we believe would be the virtues and benefits of a stateless society, but much of that discussion has to be conjectural because stateless societies are relatively rare, not non-existent, but there have not been very many of them in history. And so there's almost a vacuum of hard facts that we could advance to support our cause, and we have to rely more on analysis, on the logic of situations, and so forth. And up against our arguments are generally people who believe that the state is, if not a positive good, it's unavoidable, and in any event, it's essential because it provides certain goods and services that at least its defenders claim would not be provided at all or provided sufficiently without the states making that provision. So this debate, in which you and I have both been involved for a very long time, is almost tiresome sometimes because we run through the same claims and counterclaims again and again and again, and every time some new person enters the discussion, and we have to almost retrace 50 years of old ground, if not more. But one of the things that struck me in thinking about this question for many years is that people fail to think at all, or fail to think very hard, about what a dangerous institution the state is. And even though states in history have done horrible things, and I think that's a huge mark against them, if that's all we had against them. Nevertheless, if we combine state power with the technology that's available to states today, not only military technology, but the technology of mass surveillance, the technology of attempted mind control, and other nefarious technologies, we get an institution which really has awesome power for evil. And what I've tried to do as my little contribution to this discussion is to bring to the forefront those awesome powers, and to show with actual historical evidence that one is not simply conjecturing about what states will do when they have that kind of power. We don't have to go very far back in the lifetime even of many people who are alive today to find states engaged in the most horrifying destructive actions. And yet people tend to put those aside and say, but what about the roads, and what about the garbage collection, and so forth? It seems to me that all those things really pale beside the risk that people run when states are in charge of society. And so I've tried to pursue my thinking along those lines, and you, as you know, I've lectured along those lines at the Mises University in the past, and I may do it again if I have a chance, because I think this is really a terribly important matter that people need to think about more seriously.
And of course, with the U.S. empire, we have a state that is more powerful than any state that's ever existed, that seems to have the ambition to be the world state, that sees nothing beyond it, whether it's international soccer or whatever, that sees nothing beyond its control, would like to take over the solar system and outer space, as far as I can tell, as well.
There's a term that they use at the Pentagon called full spectrum dominance. And that means that the military people are researching and developing technologies with an eye toward controlling the air, the land, the sea, and space, which doesn't leave any place for us to run, really. So I think you're right that the ambitions of the power wielders have no limits, and they haven't. Neither technological nor moral limits. I think that moral part is even more critical than the technological part. Sometimes we can think of obstructions or workarounds in the technology. We can think of ways that we might prevent harm to ourselves. But when states are in the hands of essentially immoral people, as I believe practically every one of them is, and certainly the U.S. state, then we've got a serious problem, because we're up against people who will not restrain themselves from doing evil. And so we have to somehow work against that and try to open the eyes of enough people that they will stop complying with the dictates and desires of these evil people.
Bob, I've often thought it's important to try to communicate to people in this exactly what you're talking about, that the leaders in the state may decide to do something or not to do something on the basis of whether it's they believe it's prudent for themselves or whether it's actually practical to carry it out. It's never a consideration, well, we can't do that because it's wrong.
Never. I think you'd have trouble finding in the past 100 years a half dozen examples of state authorities who restrained themselves from doing evil because they explicitly said, as it were, we can't do that. That would be wrong. They do all kinds of things and refrain from things on grounds of expedience, as you say. But those are self-interested calculations. They're not guided by or ruled by any kind of higher moral thinking.
And yet people sometimes don't seem to be worried. It's just recently come out that the Pentagon mailed anthrax to a bunch of laboratories around the country and around the world by mistake. So was anybody killed by this? This is, of course, one of the WMDs that they specialize in. But I can't seem to tell that the American people even care. I mean, whereas if it turned out that, Al-Qaeda did this, why would be the end of the world and we'd have to nuke the entire Middle East?
Well, as you know very well, Lou, back in the 50s and 60s, the Pentagon carried out a variety of experiments on the unwitting American people. It sprinkled pathogens of various kinds over entire cities to find out what would happen and to test hypotheses about various antidotes and what have you. And so, you know, people are simply ignorant, Lou. But I think the ordinary person has no idea whatsoever of the depths of evil that the state has evinced in its history. This is not speculation on anybody's part. These actions are actually well documented at this point, although one presumes that there are all sorts of things that haven't been brought to light yet, just as Edward Snowden not long ago brought to light the massive spying of the NSA on everybody, so far as I can tell, not just everybody in the United States, but if possible, everybody on Earth, so far as electronic communication is concerned. So people just don't know, and they believe the kind of foggy portrait that's painted for them by state authorities and the mass media. And when you tell them something, but look, think about this thing the state did, their first inclination is to deny it or to say, you know, that's just a conspiracy theory, or there's no good evidence for it, or that was an exception to the rule. So there's such a built-in intransigence that has been put there by state efforts in education and the media and in the public pronouncements of public officials over the years, that most people have been taken in by it.
Bob, I've often thought that the riveting part of the New Testament where the devil takes the Lord up to the top of the mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and says, all these can be yours if only you'll bow down. It's always meant to me that the devil has this within his gift, that there is actually something diabolical about political power.
I believe that's so, Lou. I mean, from a historical standpoint, it's very difficult to deny, even if you're not much of an ethicist, that states have done one evil thing after another. And, you know, sometimes when you tell people that, they say, yeah, but that's just people, you know, private people do evil things too. Well, of course they do, but they don't do them on the scale, and they don't do them with similar impunity. And that's the problem that people need to worry about a lot more than they do.
Bob, you've been a great scholar. You are a great scholar. We're going to list, of course, some of your books, but your life is about to take a turn. You and your wife, Elizabeth, are going to be moving to Mexico where you're building a house. And I hear tell that you're going to start a school for 100 Mexican children.
Well, we are moving, Lou, I think within the next few months, God willing. and the guys building our house stay on the job. But I'm not going to start a school. What we are going to do is, I'm sure we'll involve ourselves, as Elizabeth has already started to do, in helping the children in the village near where we'll be living. It's a little place of about 400 people called Ixcalac, and there's a school there that runs through elementary school, which is 6 grades in Mexico. And even though a couple of school teachers are sent out to teach, they don't always show up. And even when they do, the children have no school materials to work with. All those things have to be provided by their parents. And so we can help out. We've already, you know, sent some stuff to the school for the kids to use, books and school supplies and what have you. And I wouldn't be surprised if Elizabeth and probably me as well were to get much more involved in helping out there.
Do you think that, just thinking about the future, that the radioactivity won't reach that part of Mexico?
I haven't investigated that. We have put a lot of thought into finding out whether we are sufficiently remote and in a place that is not endowed with anything that attracts either the Mexican government in any substantial way or the drug lords. So it's a very far away, into the road type location. I might add, however, that it is a tropical paradise, so I don't want to make it sound like all hardship. It's not that at all, but it's not like being in a place where wealth attracts predators of various kinds. And So we're, in that respect, we're looking forward to living in a place where order is really in the hands of the local people. And I think it's instructive that in our inquiries, we've basically found that there is no serious crime there. You know, small burglaries seem to be the worst thing that ever happens. No violent crime, and people take care of one another and look out for one another. And, of course, they don't put up with people who commit serious crimes. So justice is more swift and more effective, and that's as it ought to be. It ought to be that way everywhere.
Fred Reed, the wonderful writer who also lives in Mexico, argues that despite what one might think about the situation, about the nature of the Mexican government or whatever, it's a far freer country than the United States. That if you're not involved in politics, you're pretty much left alone.
I think that's for the most part true, Lou. I mean, the Mexican government does have a bureaucracy that tries to do all sorts of things, as we discovered in getting the permits to build our house inside a national park. But despite that, day-to-day life is much freer for Mexicans. They're not ordered about to the same extent that Americans are. They're not held to the endless regulations. They're not spied on every time they make a move. And this isn't because the Mexican government is a bunch of saints by any means, but it's because the Mexican government does not have the same resources that the U.S. and other advanced countries' governments have at their disposal. Mexico, I'm sure, could not afford to build an elaborate NSA as the U.S. government can afford by virtue of its enormous predation on the productive people of this country.
Other people have pointed out that while the taxes may seem to be high, in fact, they're not high as compared to the United States because people don't pay them. And Fred said he didn't even mind a certain level of bribery as versus taxation. He said, at least when I'm paying off the cop, I know it's going to support that guy's family. So he said, rather than just going into the maw of Washington, D.C., and I have absolutely no idea what the heck is happening to it.
Well, that's true. You're closer to the enforcement in Mexico. But we have to recognize that there's a lot of first-stage predation taking place in the United States now, too. You know, a lot of people driving down here in my part of the country are just stopped by police and robbed, especially if they're if they are Mexicans or other foreigners who have some reason to, you know, to maintain their privacy and to carry a lot of cash around. The police have no reluctance at all about simply stealing these people's money. And I don't hear about that sort of thing in Mexico. And in fact, even the usual tales about having to pay off a cop who stops you for speeding or something turn out to be ones that you can bargain down pretty far and still not have to go beyond paying a little mordida to the policeman. But I've also talked to people who've lived there for a long, long time and have had virtually no such encounters at all. So I'm not thinking it's going to be a part of daily life at all, and I am expecting things to be relatively peaceful in the life I'm planning to lead there.
Well, Bob, it's magnificent, and we're going to miss you here. And I hope that you're—I know it's not your first goal, but it'd be wonderful if you could still be involved via Wi-Fi with those of us you've left behind in our dictatorial, corrupt, and quite outrageous and frightening United States of America. But God bless you and Elizabeth for doing this. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I hope you'll at least tell us more about what happens to you and the wonderful life you're going to be leading.
Well, thank you, Lou. I really appreciate your good wishes. And we will miss a lot of people that we have frequent contact with in the United States. But as you know, there's no free lunch and there's no free tropical paradise either. So So I will have internet, and I don't know exactly how I'll be living once I'm there. We have to be fairly self-sufficient. But if it turns out to be possible and my mind is bent in that direction, I'll just continue to make a nuisance of myself on the World Wide Web.
Well, that's magnificent, Bob. You're a star, a scholarly star, a teaching star, a writing star, and now you're going to be a star of Mexico, too. So that's pretty neat.
Estrella.
Bob, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me, Lou.
Bye-bye.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.